When we talk about healthcare and sustainability, there's an age-old question that always comes up. How do you weigh up saving lives in the now versus saving lives from the impact of climate change and degradation in the coming decades? As a single planet species, our health is directly aligned to that of our planet. And yet we find it very difficult to make decisions on a planetary timescale. How do we prioritise? The patient today or the fate of the many in the future? With the world heating up and filling up quicker than we can come up with solutions to stem the tide, by many measures the planet's tipping point, our moment of no return, is coming up fast. So what's to be done? Where do we start? How do you bring cathedral thinking into an industry which is in many respects, quite rightly, focused on saving lives in the here and now, regardless of the environmental impact? To find out, join me, Matt Millington, as we plug in to Invent Health, a podcast brought to you by technology and product development company TTP. Today we ask, sustainability in healthcare. What's to be done? Hello, and welcome to Invent Health, a podcast about the future of health and technology. In today's episode, we're changing tack to look not at the patient, but at the planet, to find out what healthcare systems around the world are doing to tackle the climate emergency. The scientific consensus on global heating is fairly damning. If you look at a pie chart showing where the greenhouse emissions which are causing global heating are coming from, the ones which stick out tend to be agriculture, steel production, transport, and yes, you guessed it, healthcare. It's an issue which seems insurmountable. But it's also an issue which is now finally being tackled head on. Now more than ever, the conversation about what healthcare systems across the globe can do to curb their emissions and reduce their waste is really starting to gather pace. But with the scale of such a problem, it's difficult to know where to begin. How do we start to make impactful changes in hospitals and beyond so that lives are saved both in the present while ensuring the future of the next generation is protected? To find out, I got in touch with two people who are leading the charge towards more sustainable systems in the US and the UK. Dr. Seema Gandhi is a professor in the Department of Anesthesia and the Medical Director of Sustainability at the University of California, San Francisco Health System. Dr. Mike Spiro is an anaesthetist, or anaesthesiologist, depending on where you are in the world. He's an intensive care consultant at a London NHS teaching hospital. He has research interests in resource utilization, enhanced recovery, innovation, and sustainability in healthcare. To save on carbon emissions, we got together virtually to explore the challenges that healthcare is currently facing in terms of sustainability and the solutions to address them. So I was fed a statistic a couple of weeks ago that said the global carbon footprint of healthcare systems was around, equated to somewhere between 1% and 5%.
So Matt, I think you're absolutely correct. And sort of recent evidence, and very recent in the last couple of years, has sort of accounted for about 4% of all the global emissions come from global healthcare. And in that, you know, there are certain countries that have a larger share of it, and US and China being among the two top two. But even comparing the OECD countries, about 4 or 5% comes from healthcare. And that's really very impactful because, you know, we know as just as a sort of globally, there's a lot of burden that that produces on the resources that we have, and also the sort of economic challenges that go with it.
Sure. And at a kind of smaller level, Mike, can you tell me a little bit more around what that looks like in a hospital environment?
Well, as Seema says, you know, the UK situation is about the same as very similar to the US, maybe slightly lower in absolute percentages, but somewhere between 2 and 5% of carbon emissions and emissions contributing to climate change come from healthcare in the UK. I think we're all acutely aware, actually, that we need to do something about it. And I think certainly the younger generations are much more aware of the climate emergency that we're facing. And many of my colleagues, particularly junior colleagues, feel a bit uneasy about the amount of waste that we produce. And I think we need to really focus in on that. And I think it's going to take action from each and every one of us, really, to try to reduce what we the waste that we produce and the emissions that damage the environment.
U.S. healthcare is unsustainable. You know, we spend close to $3 trillion, and at a growth rate which is now at like 17% of GDP that's spent on healthcare, we know that we're twice the average of the other sort of developing countries, and I don't think that that's going to be sustainable. And this was particularly highlighted, Matt, I think during COVID, because we realized how vulnerable our economic and supply chain is in healthcare. So I think that knowing that we're not in a sustainable situation from an environmental and an economic perspective is also very impactful.
A couple of questions I want to ask off the back of that. Who out there is doing a good job? Are there examples outside of the US and the UK that you hold with high esteem?
You know, Matt, to that I would say that I wish I had the answer. And that's exactly the answer that all of us are looking for. And the reason being that other than NHS, which has accounting and reporting and actually has some mandates which are government guided, there is no other health system in the world that right now has it.
If the US healthcare system were a country, it alone would be the 14th largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world. I'll let that sink in. It's a truly staggering statistic. So where are these emissions coming from? Well, the UK-based medical journal, The Lancet, found that in 2019, 62% of the NHS's total emissions came from its supply chain, with the rest made up of direct patient care, visitor and worker travel, and various other factors. A large portion of that direct care quota comes from one place in particular, and it's a place you wouldn't quite expect. Seema and Mike, who are both anaesthetists, have a unique perspective on this.
Both Seema and I, sort of from an anaesthetic point of view, are very aware that we have a direct impact on the environment with the choices that we make in the operating theatre. And that certainly is something that people have looked into, and there are lots of quality improvement projects going on thinking about climate change and emissions from the operating theatre.
So you mentioned anaesthetics. What are the areas of anaesthetics that are the biggest contributors to pollution or they're unsustainable?
So Matt, within healthcare, which we know is sort of a very resource intensive area, like all the other service industries, I think hospitals and acute care settings particularly are very resource intensive. And within hospitals, I think the operating rooms, and especially where Mike and we work as anesthesiologists, account for about 5% of all the emissions that come from acute care settings. And within anesthesia, we use anesthesia gases. And anesthesia gases are very potent greenhouse gases. And so that makes anesthesia a big contributor. And actually, recently, there was a study comparing operating rooms across three different countries, and I think they compared Canada, US, and then center in the UK, and really carbon footprint of the operating room. And we found out that anesthesia gases in North America contribute to 50% of the emissions that come from the operating room.
Certainly, the longer that you spend asleep, so the longer duration of operation, the bigger the greenhouse gas emissions that will come from anaesthetic gases. So we know that anaesthetic gases are harmful. The most damaging to the environment is desflurane, which is the most modern anaesthetic agent that we have. And it's very attractive as an anaesthetic agent because people wake up very quickly from a desferrin anesthetic. The problem is that it is very, very harmful to the environment. And as Seema said, hangs around for a very long time once it's exhaled by the patient.
There's that dilemma rearing its head again. Anesthetics are vital in surgery, but they're hugely polluting. So what do we prioritise, the patient or the future of the planet? And to make matters more difficult, greenhouse gases are not the only source of pollutants from hospitals. An enormous problem comes from the sheer amount of waste that's produced on a daily basis. Mike and Seema, who have both worked extensively in operating theatres, have seen this firsthand.
Seema and I are collaborating on some interesting projects where we're looking at the amount of waste produced in the operating room and in the intensive care unit afterwards. And we're actually comparing waste production between the US and the UK. Until we kind of quantify the amount of waste we're producing, it's quite difficult to know how we can impact upon it.
I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to generating waste from a profession such as healthcare, it's pretty understandable. And in many cases, I suspect it's highly justified. We're keeping people alive. But I just wanted to dig a little bit more into the detail of that.
I mean, Seema and I are particularly, well, I'm particularly interested in seeing how we compare the UK versus US with the amount of waste we produce in the operating room and intensive care. And, you know, there are some pretty, it's pretty staggering when you actually look at the amount of waste produced. And actually, a lot of what we produce didn't used to happen. So I think we used to use reusable gowns and drapes. And certainly when I started, when I first set foot in an operating room quite some time ago, a lot of things were reusable. So surgical gowns, surgical drapes were all reusable. They're all now essentially plastic and fabric based that are disposable.
So do you think it is cheaper and that's why it's done? Or do you think in many cases it is better? Because I would assume with all of this sort of disposable equipment, there is a reduced risk of infection. There must be a reason for it beyond price. Do you think that's fair?
Matt, I think that I'm so glad you asked this question, because to all your audience out there, I think the perception is that if we use single-use devices and single-use equipment, then somehow they're safer. And I think that the industry has definitely tapped into this fear and definitely pushed more single-use devices because patients and providers feel like it's safer. And there are multiple sort of papers and peer-reviewed papers published out there that have sort of unequivocally shown that though our consumption of single-use devices has gone up in healthcare, it hasn't actually correlated with decrease in infection rates. So our infection rates are still going up, and so is our use of single-use devices. And I want to give you a couple examples, if I can, Matt. And so one big difference that happens between the UK and the US for anesthesia, and I'm going to pick one product, is anesthesia breathing circuits. Right? And those are the circuits that actually take the anesthesia gas and give it to the patient. That's how we connect the patient and the machine. Now, in UK, in Australia, in Germany, all these breathing circuits are changed either every day or every 7 days. And there are some very smart people that have done multiple studies on it, and they've grown stuff and cultured all the bacteria. And they have found that circuits that are used for 1 day or 7 days actually have no difference. So the point in all of this is that, yes, some of this is just perception that single-use devices are safer. And then to your question, Matt, about, sort of how do you really define cost? And Mike brought up textiles. And there is multiple, again, evidence out there that from a water consumption and an energy consumption point, reusable textiles actually are about 10 to 15 fold better than single-use textiles.
This physical waste issue is perhaps easier to get your head around than emissions. Anyone who's been in hospital has seen the quite incredible amount of single-use plastic used in every procedure or throughout inpatient daily care. And for those who haven't, there's a video online which lays the problem out very clearly. Maria Koik is a Dutch artist based in Groningen. Her artistic practice has focused on waste for many years now. Whether it's sculptures made from plastic bottles or tackling the issue of beachside pollution in countries as far afield as Sierra Leone, Maria's work consistently takes aim at the unsustainable use of plastics, while simultaneously opening up questions on how we might solve it. In recent years, Maria has turned her gaze onto waste in healthcare specifically. After needing treatment for breast cancer and seeing the amount of waste which came with it, Maria decided to collect all the waste produced during one of her procedures and made a video to raise awareness of the issue. It soon went viral with tens of thousands of views. Maria calls it Operation Waste. So, Maria, tell me about your video for Operation Waste. Can you paint a picture of what it looks like and what it actually does?
You see me laying on the ground in the Vitruvius scheme. This was my arms wide, my legs wide, like the Vitruvius Man of Da Vinci. You can see it in every IKEA shop everywhere, the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And around me, in circles around me, I laid all my operation waste of one operation. And that's a lot. That's a huge amount of waste. And that's, I'm laying between scissors of stainless steel, I'm laying in packaging of all the sterile things they used. I'm laying between the skirts, the handkerchiefs, all colored green and blue and white.
And it's a photo. A lot of gloves as well.
Yeah, the gloves. Yeah, and taking a photo from above. So.
Just to sort of finish painting the picture, if nobody's clicked on the link yet, how much waste was generated? How big was the auditorium that you displayed it in?
The 16 meters by 24 meters. It's one of the biggest stage floors from Holland. Yeah, it was going up for 19 meters high. So the picture is made from 19 meters above it.
Yeah. And it's what got me mostly was, first off, it's a very beautiful image. And obviously the message is very direct. It's that there is a lot of wastage happening when it comes to our healthcare systems, and particularly the experience you had. But the other aspect I thought was very interesting was that there was no accusative message around it. You just laid it out, laid it bare, I suppose, for everybody to see. I guess, was that intentional?
Yes, it is. You know, I'm a waste artist, I think, for the last 12, 13 years. And nobody wants to look at a waste, you know. But if you package it in a beautiful thing, then you will look at it because it's beautiful. So that was the first intention of making this art video. And also, I didn't want to point or accuse people like, from, hey, what is this? No. Is there another way? Because I was the patient, I'm the person in the middle, and I was a patient, I'm recovered from breast cancer, and it's quite a thing, of course. And I'm so happy that they helped me in this way. I'm so happy with the doctors and the treatment I got, and I'm still alive, you know? It was on the right spot. They discovered the breast cancer because of the investigation for all the persons. I'm happy with the hospital. I'm happy with the treatment I got. So I don't want to point. No, but there is a question. So many waste for one person. That's ridiculous, I think.
How easy was it to make the film? I would assume that a hospital wouldn't want this kind of thing to happen. They wouldn't necessarily want the curtain drawn back and sort of shown how much actually goes into, well, a very good thing. How much waste goes into making somebody better, you know, saving somebody's life, essentially. But they were open to it.
Not really. I had two operations. First, my breast amputation, and after that, my breast reconstruction. And between that time, it was 1.5 years, I asked permission from the manager of the hospital. It's a big hospital in Groningen, a really big hospital. And he said, no, I don't want it. And it's too expensive. And also, I don't want an infection scene. You know, an infection costs money. Mm-hmm. So we have to do this. Like, we have to do this. We can't do it in a different way. And then I showed him the scissors, the stainless scissors for once. It's a disposable scissors. Unbelievable. Really, I thought when I found them in my room, when they cut my bandage in two pieces, of course, with the scissors, they throw it in the bin. And I thought, hey, that's stupid. Why? What are these scissors doing here? So I brought it to the nurse to bring it, to give it back. I said, oh no, that's disposable. And 30 years ago, when I was a nurse, we brought it all with us, you know, the scissors and the hourglass and so on. And then we just cleaned it up and then we used it again. So I was in shock and I thought, okay. Mm-hmm. And I showed him the scissors, the manager of the hospital, and I said, let me be the Greta Thunberg of this hospital. Please, someone has to bring it out because this is ridiculous. So yeah, it was no. And then he saw the scissors and I was explaining him, so for yes. And then he gave me all the space I needed.
Yeah. What did you do with the scissors?
I reused them. And
You still got them?
I still got them, yes, of course, because they're really good scissors.
Good scissors, right? Yeah. Once Maria had got the okay from the hospital to hold on to the waist and create her video, she obviously began to get questions about her project from people working there. And the doctors and nurses' reaction to operation waste was actually really telling, and similar to the way Mike and Seema talk about the issue. By speaking to people in hospitals in the Netherlands and beyond, Maria came across people not fighting against the issue, but with a real understanding of its enormous scale and the need to solve it.
It's a kind of a secret in the hospitals. So I had to come for 3 months every week to the plastic surgery. And I said, I want to collect all the stuff you use for me every time. So I was still collecting. And also for every MRI scan or whatever, I asked, can I have all the stuff you used for me? Otherwise you will bring it to the bin, whatever. And everybody react like, why? And then I explained why I was doing this. And everybody said, oh, it's awful. You don't know how much waste we are making in the hospital. And everybody felt concerned about it. But nobody, because you're saving lives, you know, come on, why should you complain about the waste? But there was one doctor who called me after the video and she said, I was busy the whole week with separating my waste at home, plastic, board, paperwork, and so on. And then I came in the operation room and there was no system. You can put everything together and that was the waste. And she was complaining about it with the operation team and they said, didn't you see the video? Now I made, of course. And she was so happy. She thanked me for that. She said there was no other way to bring it out. This problem, this huge problem.
So this has raised awareness externally. I think probably a problem people assumed was happening, but had never had it spelt out in such a visually arresting way. What has it done internally within the hospital? Has it created any change?
Yeah, a lot. And for my own hospital this morning, I was at the hospital and they told very happily to, they started a green team in my hospital and they separating the waste in the operation rooms. So that's one thing. There's also the professor of the anesthesia team wrote an article because of this photo and video for World Magazine, whatever, I don't know. That was only in my hospital, but in my country, I think everybody who's working in healthcare have seen my video.
Now that you've pointed to the problem, has anybody asked you to work on anything tangible that solves some of these issues?
I've been ambassador of the patients for the healthcare are also ambassador of the patients for B. Braun, the supplier of all the surgery tools. And I'm not a member of roundtable discussions with surgery persons and so on.
Maria, in her own way, sought to shine a light on the amount of waste produced by hospitals and operations by measuring her own. What she created was a startling, powerful video that compels you to get up and do something. But let's get back to the clinic. How are doctors on the front line measuring the amount of waste they are producing every day, month or year? Before we get into solutions to the waste and emissions issue, I wanted to know what Mike and Seema are doing specifically to measure their output, because data on this topic is notoriously difficult to come by. How do we get the data to make a call on whether something is more sustainable or environmentally friendly a solution than something else? Do you use a system that allows you to evaluate, you know, what is a sustainable solution versus something else?
Matt, absolutely there is. So there's a process called life cycle analysis. And what this takes into account is exactly what you mentioned. It takes into account the sourcing of the products used to make it, the transport, the energy that goes in making the product, the utilization of the products, its disposal. It actually looks at the entire cradle-to-grave approach of products and helps us to compare single versus reusable products. Now, as you can understand, this is a very labor-intensive process, and it needs a lot of resources. But there are a few products that we have life cycle analyses on, and we are able to compare single-use versus reusable ones. And one that comes to mind, which has been extensively studied, is laryngoscopes, which both Mike can use on a daily basis. And studies have compared single-use versus reusable laryngoscopes. And they've showed that even considering all the manufacturing, disposal, and the energy and the water that goes to making a product, reusable laryngoscopes are fivefold better than a single-use disposal laryngoscopes.
I was looking today at initiatives out there, and I came across one from the University of Exeter and the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital, where they've produced a device that scavenges the volatile anesthetic agents that are vented from the circuit, captures them, extracts them, and then that can be purified, rebottled, and reused. So instead of going back into the environment, it can be used, either resold or used for anaesthetizing further patients. And I just thought that was an incredibly slick and clever way of reducing the environmental impact of these volatile anesthetic agents.
Matt, I want to add a little bit, and I'm really glad that Mike brought up Desflurane and hinted upon some sort of regulatory and theoretical versus scientific concerns. UCSF, University of California, San Francisco, where I work, is where Desflurane was invented. And I am very happy to say that we have actually eliminated the use of Desflurane. And I like to showcase this as one example where, sort of given evidence and science, healthcare providers, you know, if they're given all of that, they're happy to make the change. So the way we did that, Mike, is we sort of compared with our peer countries. And as you mentioned, UK and Germany and a lot of other countries did not have regulations on Desflurane. And we were able to present that evidence to our providers and the impact that dust leaves on the environment. So since 2019, UCSF and actually a lot of other UCs have eliminated Desflurane.
Also where, you know, in the NHS, Desflurane has become much more difficult to come by. The use of Desflurane is now heavily discouraged.
Whether it's exciting new technologies or just actioning the change to use less polluting already existing solutions, Hospitals are making great strides in the push to create a more sustainable healthcare system. And given the gravity and scale of the task in hand, inventing new methodologies and systems alongside the technology is probably our greatest asset. However, sometimes change can be most effective when done using the most simple of adjustments. That Lancet study I referenced earlier also states that 10% of healthcare emissions were from staff commuting and patient and visitor travel. As such, Mike and Seema are also big advocates of more preventative models of healthcare, ones which can keep people out of the hospital and out of the polluting cycle. I was talking to somebody the other day over coffee and talking about sustainability in healthcare. And yes, we can think about ways of being more sustainable in very specific use cases within the healthcare system. But surely the most sustainable solution is to keep people out of the healthcare system.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Matt. I think that even from an emissions and a sustainability perspective, we need to change our lens and our focus from curative to preventative. And I think that this is where, you know, technology and AI and all the modeling systems that they have can probably predict your risk of obesity. Or maybe they can predict which population is more vulnerable to smoking and COPD based on all the AI information we have and geographical information and demographic information we have. So I think that using technology and AI can bring us more towards the preventative and, you know, less away from the curative side, which will in turn affect emissions and the cost.
But this is how we've always done it. It's incredibly powerful, isn't it? Very difficult to get past. I mean, you mentioned you'd done it with Desflurane. What can you tell me more about how you actually got people to stop doing what they'd always done?
You know, I thought a lot about what works better for us adults, intelligent humans. Is it the carrot approach? Is it the stick approach? And but anyway, what we did is, I think what really works well is aligning people with what their thoughts and what their actions are. And I know that a lot of us, and almost all of us, do care about the environment. And getting people to really align their actions with what their beliefs and thoughts are. And when we presented the evidence as to how bad Desflurane was, I think I appealed to their internal sense and their internal compass that they had. So that's something that we did, is education and information about Desflurane. The second thing is, we started small. You know, we picked one gas, we picked one institution, and used a healthy comparison between peers. So I could say that, you know, I would go and say UK doesn't use DES or other hospitals don't use it. And likewise, Mike could use a little healthy competition and say, you know, UC HSF has eliminated plastic gowns in ICU.
It's that sort of collaboration and comparison that is incredibly helpful. You know, if one healthcare institution has shown that they can eliminate, you know, waste without impacting patient care, then why should other centers not adopt the same approach? I think that's kind of how we've got to think about this. It's not competition. It's the healthy kind of marginal gains from learning from each other.
Timelines and plans are where the conversation about making a real sustainable impact has to begin. But with the planet's own timeline ever shortening, turning those goals into a reality is becoming more pressing by the day. However, with world governments' increasing focus on the environment and a generational and cultural shift moving the narrative towards action rather than apathy, genuine change looks closer than ever. Whether healthcare, with its continued dilemma between saving patients in the now and those in the future, can be a leading industry in this brave new world is difficult to say, but Mike and Seema seem certainly optimistic.
I think just from Mike, on an observation of working in healthcare, recently there is a huge focus on the environment. And I don't know whether that's a post-COVID phenomenon or just the timing of us realizing that we can't continue the way we are. But there's a huge awareness at work about waste and pollution. And I think we need to kind of take advantage of the kind of groundswell of enthusiasm and try to strike while the iron's hot and get into a position where we can become sustainable.
Normally it's a fairly bleak conversation, but actually it feels like maybe a storm is the wrong analogy, but it feels like we're in the middle of a perfect storm of technology. We've just had a global unifying event that has precipitated cultural change, societal change. So perhaps we're just at the very start of solving this massive problem, but hopefully bit by bit, because it's far too big to solve in one go.
You know, you've said we a few times, and I wanted to define who the we is.
Yeah, good point.
Right? Who is the we that will be a part of this solution? And I think that it's such a big we, it's all of us. And then the larger we is going to rest with the policymakers. It's going to rest with the corporate industry to come up with products that are more sustainable, right? It's going to rest with technology, making it more accessible and really giving us predictors that will help us, you know, bring it to a preventative area. So I think it's going to take all of us together and working, and it seems like a big lofty task, but very achievable. And while that is happening, I think we need to start making one change at a time, whether it is plastic gowns for Matt or whether it is bringing reusable anesthesia circuits for me. We can start small with our eyes on the bigger goal.
For many, including myself, thinking about having an impact on such a huge and insurmountable problem can lead to frustration, and often apathy is not too far behind. If you can't identify something specific to make a difference, the most important thing to do is to get engaged, read up, or listen up. The chances are you might find a problem you think you could address in your own way, or you might just get frustrated. But rather than allowing apathy to creep in, your frustration has value. It may lead you to inadvertently put pressure on the systems responsible, and that pressure at scale could add up to the response and change that's needed. The truth is that much of the change required is based on an underlying need for political will for change. Political will relies on engagement. If you have a problem we might solve together, please do get in touch. If not, please do remain engaged and informed, as that can make a difference too. That's all for today. Thanks to you for listening, and thanks so much to all our guests, Mike, Seema, and Maria, for their insight into this most pressing of issues. We'll be back next week, where we'll be looking at healthcare's journey from the clinic into the home, to see if one day soon, going for a checkup will be done from your sofa. We'll see you then. Invent Health is a podcast from TTP. It was co-written and hosted by me, Matt Millington, design and strategy consultant at TTP. It was co-written and produced by Harry Stott. Executive producers were Abby Williams and Sam Zaccarino from TTP, and Ollie Judge from Adrift Entertainment.